I was 2.5 years old when I remembered I had died by falling in a well in Chomuha village when I was 10. I was reborn and later I met my uncle Tanji from my previous life. I recognized him and spoke to him. He said, "No, our child died a while back, but he promised to send my mother from that life to see me. She came and was very loving and sat me on her knee. Then my brother from that village took me to my parents' house. I stayed there for 10 years. We took Manju, her 2 little daughters and a young chaperone to meet the parents of the dead girl. The visitors knocked on the front door of a tiny terraced house and were received with obvious joy. The father, who runs a small tea shop, explained, 'We call her Krishna Devi. She is my daughter, she is Krishna. Her children call me grandfather and they call my wife grandmother. When she came last year for 2 weeks with the children, everything was as normal. They ate, drank and lived with us and played with the other children. They are not outsiders, they are my very own.'" Dr. Pasricho asked, "Do you see her as Krishna? You don't accept her as Manju?" "Manju means nothing to us," he replied. "She is Krishna. She is our daughter Krishna of her previous life. We wait for her to come home. It is the clear bond of affection between the girl and a family less well off than her own which Dr. Pasricha considers one of the strengths of this case. Manju is a girl from a Brahmin family, the highest caste of Hindu, and chose to live for years with a family from a lower, tradesman's caste. Critics of these cases sometimes suggest that reincarnates come from poor families trying to scrape up an acquaintanceship with a better-off family. In Manju's case, the opposite is true. We intended to record another of Dr. Pasricha's remarkable case studies and traveled further north to Kanpur to investigate a murder of some years ago. A box was thrown from a train crossing a railway bridge over the river Ganges, but it never reached the water. It lodged in the girders of the bridge. When opened, it contained the dismembered body of a woman. Later, the woman's doctor husband was charged with her murder, but the trial was abandoned because of his ill health. Around this time, a small child claimed to be the reincarnation of the doctor's wife and made several statements. We arrived in Kanpur in the middle of a riot between Hindus and Muslims. 60 people were killed in the surrounding areas and smoke from the burning leather market could be seen from our hotel. The army imposed a curfew and it was deemed too dangerous for us to travel any further. The intrepid, fearless, Dr. Pasricha was willing to make the trip, but it was not to be. As a psychologist, Dr. Pasricha is convinced these studies have a relevance beyond the support or otherwise they might offer to the theory of reincarnation. They may also tell us something extra about human personality, revealing a possible extra dimension to all of us. The pioneering work of today's parapsychologists could end in an awareness, if not a theory, of psychic heredity. See also https://virginia.edu/perceptual-studies-wp-content-uploads-sites-360-2016/12/29-stevenson1.pdf and YouTube on this case is 89 chapter 21 The Boy Alarm. It were better to live one single day in the pursuit of understanding and meditation, than to live 100 years in ignorance and unrestraint. The Buddha, a 5-year-old boy seated on a high throne in an ornate Tibetan temple, gravely blessed every one of hundreds of pilgrims queuing to meet him. He lightly touched each lowered head and put a silk scarf around every proffered neck. 3 hours of ceremony marked the entry into Drepung Monastery of the child recognized as the reincarnation of a revered senior lama, the reborn Ling Rinpoche. This remarkable child received the homage of a gift from each of the pilgrims, who came from Asia, Europe and America. Most were monks but there were also businessmen, school teachers and a film star from Hollywood. To underline the occasion, each guest was given an envelope containing photographs of the boy and the Dalai Lama's 81-year-old senior tutor who died in 1984, an old man and a child who are one and the same, according to the Tibetan theory of rebirth. We recorded this ceremony on the 3rd of December 1990, at the Tibetan settlement in Mundgad, southern India, where the exiled Tibetans have rebuilt several of the great monasteries destroyed in their homeland by the Chinese invaders. The Tibetans are an example of a culture which not only believes in reincarnation but has its own elaborate methods of identifying reincarnates. For me, as impressive as any of the evidence, was the behavior and bearing of this small boy. For the whole of that day of long ceremony, he displayed the dignity expected of a reincarnated High Lama. Throughout the morning, he sat on a small throne just below the Dalai Lama, during prayers for the long life of the spiritual and temporal leader of the Tibetans, who is himself the most famous example of a reincarnate. The Dalai Lama is held to be the reborn Shenresi, God of Compassion, and had also lived before as all 13 previous Dalai Lamas. Children who are High Lamas reborn are Tulkas and are discovered by mystical insights and a series of tests and examinations. Little Ling Rinpoche is one of the best known of recent Tulkas. Today, he has servants and lives in a modern bungalow alongside the monastery, but until he was 18 months old, when he was recognized, he lived in the orphanage of the Tibetan children's village at Dharamsala, northern India. His mother was dead and his father was too poor to support him. Mahatma Gandhi standing with a kid, with the claim that this was Tibetan spiritual leader Dalai Lama as a child. In March 1988, I had an audience with the Dalai Lama in his palace, a bungalow and temple complex in Dharamsala. Discussing Tibetan participation in our television series on Life After Death, the Dalai Lama suggested we consider the case of Ling Rinpoche and told me about his dramatic discovery. The Tibetan press office showed me a video of the child when he was little more than 2 years old. He was seated on a huge pile of cushions and again blessing an endless line of pilgrims at a round of ceremonies at Dharamsala. He never fidgeted or cried, but between ceremonies was filmed playing with toys on the floor and being dressed and carried around by his servants. Next day, the chairman of the Dalai Lama's religious council, Kalsang Yeshe, told me more about this reincarnation of the Dalai Lama's senior tutor. The old man died on Christmas Day, the 25th of December 1984. For 2 weeks after his death, the Tibetans believed he stayed inside his body meditating. His face had been taut with pain before death, but now it was relaxed and there was no pulse or breathing or any sign of life. But his 90 servants noticed there was warmth in his abdomen and for 2 weeks his body remained like that, in the seated lotus position, with no sign of the flesh beginning to atrophy. Then the warmth disappeared from the abdomen and the Tibetans assumed the spirit had finally left the body. When a senior lama dies, he sometimes leaves messages if he is to be reborn. A recent High Lama left a series of sealed letters to be opened at various stages in the search for his reincarnation. Often a state oracle, a mystic visionary, is consulted and in a trance he will provide clues to the whereabouts of the Tulku. Example in this book, The Third Eye. Or no, DK edition, in this case, the senior tutor had been so close to the Dalai Lama that His Holiness decided to provide these mystic insights in person. Last year in Mundgad, I heard the story of the search from one of the men who led it, the present guardian of Ling Rinpoche and longtime servant to the deceased senior tutor, Lobsang Lung. I looked to His Holiness for his divine revelation as to whether a reincarnation had appeared yet. He said a reincarnation was already born in the Wudok year of the Tibetan calendar, that is 1985. The child was not in any remote place like Nepal, but in India itself in the Tibetan settlements. Two search parties set out on the mission and in 1 year collected 690 names with all the special signs surrounding their births. Further divinations by His Holiness said that the child was born at Bhopal, a 2 hours drive from Dharamsala, and where 10 children were on the list, marked as red a spot below. We visited Bhopal once again and carried out investigations. Only 3/4 of the children fared well, some even cried at being pulled close. We were not satisfied, but we noticed only at the last minute that one child was absent. He and his brother had been admitted to the infants section of the Tibetan children's village school in Dharamsala, after their mother passed away. The next day the Vndotjan Purinpok and two attendants went to the school. One child came out and held the hand of one of the attendants and was showing extraordinary cheerfulness, while they were inquiring about the child by name. This child was Tenzin Chefak himself, as they realized a few minutes later. Asked if he recognized them. The child nodded as if in affirmation. They showed the child four rosaries, including one which had belonged to the former master. To the satisfaction of all, the child picked up the genuine one without the slightest hesitation. Not only that, he held it in his left hand and with perfect mastery fingered 20 of the 25 beads of it. This reminded the search party of a childhood trait of the past master who was left-handed in his childhood. This did much to convince us we had located the right candidate. This child of just over 1 year and 9 months old, who was barely able to walk and who could not talk. Next day I went to meet this child, and upon seeing me, he showed special liking for me, came close and took hold of my bag. He reached for a pen and made a gesture of writing something on an envelope he took from my bag. That day we were received by senior staff at the school, who arranged some refreshment. We were six or seven persons, and all of a sudden the child, of his own accord, rose and distributed the sweets to all present and placed his hand on each head in the manner of blessing. We went to His Holiness and reported these incidents. He asked us to bring the child to his residence the next day. We told our attendants, and the child was happy to accompany them. On the way, one attendant asked where the residence was, and the child is said to have pointed in the right direction. When he arrived, the boy exhibited signs of recognition, reminiscent of a child meeting his parents. He sat for an hour on my lap, and when he was led to His Holiness he did not show any trait of fear. His Holiness was impressed and even expressed surprise at the small child's acuteness. His Holiness gave him a protection string and some sweets. Later His Holiness once again did a divination in front of the famous image of Lord Avalokiteshvara, making a final decision on the choice among the last four promising children. Again the decision fell in this child's favor. There were many occurrences that confirmed our belief. His behavior while eating, his smiling. He does lots of things that are typical of the past master. I served the master ever since he was 34 until he died at 91. This child loves me more than his natural father. Every time I visited him, he always insisted on accompanying me wherever I went. He always showed sensitivity in recognizing past associates and students, especially Western students of the past master. He called some close students by their names. In a recent book, the Dalai Lama has described the small boy's behavior. When I received the boy at my residence and he was brought to the door, he acted just as his predecessor had done. It was plain that he remembered his way round. Moreover, when he came into my study he showed immediate familiarity with one of my attendants, who was at the time recovering from a broken leg. First, this tiny person gravely presented him with a kata, a greetings scarf, and then, full of laughter and childish giggles, he picked up one of Lobsangawa's crutches and ran round and round carrying it as if it were a flagpole. Another impressive story concerns the time he was taken at the age of two to Bodh Gaya, where I was due to give teachings. Without anyone telling him of its whereabouts, he found my bedroom, having scrambled on his hands and knees up the stairs, and laid a kata on my bed. At Mudgad, an American guest at Ling Rinpoche's ceremony, Richard Wingarten, told us that he had met the senior tutor some years ago. It was quite a brief meeting, but the senior tutor made a very strong impression on him. I happened to meet the young boy right after he had been identified, and he ran up to me and jumped into my arms and patted me on the head. He acted very much like he knew me, and although I did not believe in reincarnation at the time, when I met this young child I was absolutely certain it was him, that it was the old man. One of the reasons for the Dalai Lama's special regard for the senior tutor was that back in 1936, he had been part of the search for the reincarnation of the 13th Dalai Lama, who had died a year earlier. There were various mystical signs and clues to lead the searchers, including visions seen in a famous mirror lake. When the party approached a farmhouse in eastern Tibet, the leader, Lama Kyutsang Rinpoche, pretended to be a servant so that he might eat in the kitchen and study the children of the house. Around his neck, this Lama wore a rosary that had belonged to the Dalai Lama. The youngest son, not yet 2 years old, seemed to recognize the rosary and wanted to be given it. Later this boy was given a series of formal tests. He was shown two identical black rosaries, one of which had belonged to the Dalai Lama. The boy selected the right one and put it round his neck. They offered him two drums. The first was a very small one which the Dalai Lama had used for calling servants, and the second was large and ornate with golden straps. The boy began to beat the small drum in the way drums are beaten during prayers. Then he was shown two walking sticks and the boy touched the wrong one. Then he paused and picked up the other which had belonged to the Dalai Lama. Later, the search party discovered that the second walking stick had also been used at some time by the 13th Dalai Lama. Today that boy, the farmer's son, is His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama. I asked if he could recall anything of those tests and the visit by the search party to his parents' farm more than 50 years ago. One quiet morning, before sunrise, I was disturbed from my sleep and put on some kind of high seat, higher than a member of the search party whose face from that moment is very clear to me. His eyes were round and forceful, an eye like an owl's. I remember in the kitchen, the leader of the party acted as a servant, but I recognized him as a lama from the Sero monastery. His body was not fat, so he was always very cold, and I remember his cold hand touching my baby hands. And then there were tests with a stick and a small drum, but it is not very clear. I asked the Dalai Lama how he would describe death. It is just a change of clothes. The being inside, his subtle consciousness continues, but the old cloth is abandoned for new clothes. 92 Chapter 22 The classic case of Shanti Devi. It is nature's kindness that we do not remember past births. Mohandas Gandhi. From antiquity, many people have claimed to remember previous lives, but none was more convincing than an 8-year-old girl in India in 1935. Shanti Devi, born in Delhi, startled the world with her verified story of a past life. Her claims were widely publicized and for a while she was famous. A crowd of 10,000 fought to catch a glimpse of her when she was taken back to the small northern Indian town of Mathura, where she said she once lived as a housewife who died in childbirth. She led the way through streets she had not seen before, straight to the house where the dead woman, Lugdi Devi, had lived. Shanti recognized and greeted Lugdi's relatives as if she had always known them, and showed where the dead woman used to hide money under the floor. Her knowledge of Lugdi's life and the town of Mathura convinced a committee of inquiry. The families of both Shanti and Lugdi accepted her as Lugdi reborn, including the dead woman's former husband, who had remarried. Professor Ian Stevenson says Shanti Devi is a classic case. No claim by her was shown to be false. Her version was written down before she was taken back to the scene of Lugdi's life, and her claims were investigated, at the time, by a committee of men of good reputation. In February 1988, I went to Delhi hoping to hear her story firsthand, but Shanti had died 2 months earlier, aged 61. Over tea, I heard the story of Shanti Devi from her brother, Mr. Vyashanarain. In 1935, not everyone had accepted Shanti's case as proof of reincarnation. A report in Hindi by Mr. Balchand Nahar the following year, on behalf of the Indian Psychoanalytical Association, complained there was no psychologist on the committee of inquiry. Nahatu interviewed Shanti and found her like a child, not a reborn adult. He said the evidence did not prove reincarnation, but he made no effort to talk to any of the known eyewitnesses to Shanti's astonishing walkabouts in Mathura. A more detailed reinvestigation was undertaken and reported in 1939 by Mr. Sushil Bose, who sought out all the main witnesses. From all these sources emerged a story every bit as fascinating as Professor Stevenson had suggested. The life of a grown woman and mother seemed somehow locked in the memory of an 8-year-old girl. Also, Shanti told both Nahatu and Bose of her experiences between lives, what happened from the moment she died as Lugdi until she was reborn as Shanti. Today, this reads like a fairly typical near-death experience, a sensation of leaving the body, seeing bright lights and meeting archetypal religious figures. But this was half a century before the modern literature on near-death experiences was written and was received skeptically by both Nahatu and Bose. Bose, whose interviews are recorded in question and answer form, began his inquiry with Shanti's father, Mr. Angbahada Mathew, head of a reasonably well-to-do family living in a three-story house in Chirakana, Old Delhi. Shanti's father said the child began speaking later than his other children. When the others were noisy or misbehaving, Shanti always tried to calm things down and settle disputes amicably. She behaved like a small adult. Map of the area and the two places that this describes, and as we see it takes many days to cover this distance, 152 kilometers, by foot. Shanti began to speak about a past life from the age of 3. Eating and dressing seemed to remind her, and she would tell her mother, "Mama, in my house in Mathura I was not accustomed to this kind of food." She also described dresses she used to wear in Mathura. She said her family there had a cloth shop, and lived in a house painted yellow. She often said such things, but her parents did not take her seriously. We thought as she grew older she would forget it. Eventually we forbade her to speak about these things, because there is a 93% belief in our sect that a boy or girl who can speak of his or her previous life with accuracy, will not live long. However, ignoring our words, she continued to speak of her desire to go to Mathura, even to neighbors who came to visit us. A relative, a teacher at a Delhi high school, heard of Shanti's memories and came to see her when she was about 8 years old. He tried to get the child to name her husband in Mathura. Shanti said, "If I can see him, I will at once recognize him." The reports say Shanti was reluctant to give the name because there was a Hindu tradition that a woman should not speak the name of her husband without good cause. The teacher offered the child a bribe. If she told him the name, he would take her to Mathura. Shanti whispered Pandit Kedarnath Chobi. Shanti's father said, "None of us had any intention of inquiring about her house at Mathura or her husband. We tried only to make her forget these things." Later, the teacher returned with a college principal, Lalakishan Chand, anxious to meet the child who could remember another life. Shanti described her house in Mathura for him and wrote down the name and address of the man she said was her husband. Not expecting a reply, Chand wrote to Pandit Kedarnath Chobi at the address given. To everyone's amazement, a few days later, Chobi wrote back saying the description of his house in the letter was most exact. Chobi asked a cousin in Delhi to visit the girl and test her story. Pandit Kanjamal came to see Shanti, who is said to have recognized him at once as a younger cousin of her husband. Shanti asked about her son and spoke of the family house and cloth shop in front of the Dwirigadesh temple. Kanjamal asked questions and was so impressed by the girl's answers, that instead of writing to his cousin, he hurried to Mathura and told Chobi his wife Lugdi Devi had been reborn. On the 12th of November 1935, a rather apprehensive Pandit Kedarnath Chobi came to Delhi to meet the child who claimed to have been his wife. He brought with him the only child of that marriage, Nabani Talal, a boy who was now a year older than Shanti, and the new wife Chobi had married after Lugdi Devi's death. When these three and Chobi's cousin arrived at the house, Shanti was in school, and had to be sent for. As a test, the cousin told everyone he had brought Chobi's older brother to see Shanti. The child was told this when she got home from school. Her father described what happened. Shanti bowed her head shyly and stood at one side. She was only 9 at the time. Seeing her behavior, everyone told her, "He is the elder brother of your husband. Why do you feel so shy with him?" Slowly the girl replied, "He isn't my husband's elder brother, he is my husband. I have told you about him many times." When Shanti saw her son, she embraced him and wept for a long time. She asked her mother to bring all her toys for the boy, but she was so eager, she could not wait, and ran to get them herself. Shanti's father continued, when Shanti had brought all her toys and given them to her son, who was now older than she, a wonderful expression of motherly love could be seen in her eyes and face. No one seeing that expression could think she was only a child. It seemed she had become middle-aged. She began to shed tears from joy and motherly love, and at times wept aloud. Seeing this, the crowd also began to weep. Word of this strange family reunion spread. People gathered at the house, curious to see what was going on. Embarrassed by this, Chobi suggested they go for a ride around Delhi in an open carriage, or tonga. On a wide road, some distance away, Shanti and the boy Nabanita walked hand in hand. They stayed away from the house until the crowds had dispersed. Shanti asked her mother to prepare a meal and described the foods Chobi liked to eat. She also pointed to jewelry, which had once belonged to her, now being worn by Chobi's wife. After the meal, Shanti looked at Chobi's wife and said to him, "Why did you marry her? Didn't we agree that you would not marry again?" Read online link, video on the case. According to Shanti's father, Chobi hung his head and said nothing. Then he questioned the girl. "Can you give a description of the Mathura house so that I can really understand that you actually lived in it?" Shanti said, "In the inner courtyard of the house there is a well. I would usually sit on a stone beside that well and take my bath." Chobi asked, "How could you recognize this boy as your own son? At the time of your death, this boy was only 9 days old, and you only saw him once in your life." Shanti replied, "He is my life. My life has recognized my life." 94. It was true that Lugdi Devi had died within 2 weeks of giving birth to her only child, but identifying the boy was not really difficult. Who else could he be? He was with his father and was clearly the right age to be her son. Chobi had another test for Shanti. He insisted on a private talk and afterwards gave his verdict. "No one except my previous wife and myself could possibly know the detail of the personal talks that we had together. That Shanti is my dead wife, Lugdi Devi, I have not the least doubt." So far, the Shanti Devi story is fascinating but largely anecdotal. Shanti had correctly told her mother Chobi had a mole on the left side of his face, was of a fair complexion and wore glasses for reading, but the witnesses are members of the girl's family. Perhaps Shanti recognized Chobi because she was told who he was by an onlooker in the crowd. Maybe the mole on his face had given him away. Perhaps she had even seen him before. The investigator Nahata had been told Chobi sometimes went to a sweetmeats shop in Delhi, and Shanti as a child might have seen him there, it was suggested. But for the next stage of Shanti Devi's story there were thousands of witnesses. Shanti had become a celebrity after the Delhi reunion when the Indian press printed her story. Even Mahatma Gandhi, father of the Indian nation, came to ask questions, and expressed himself well satisfied by her answers. The schoolgirl had captured the public's imagination. A committee of inquiry, 15 of Delhi's most prominent and respected citizens, was set up. Members included the editor of a Delhi newspaper, The Fej, a member of parliament, a business magnate, and an eminent lawyer. They immediately wanted to take Shanti and her parents to Mathura, to see if the girl could identify the places she claimed to remember. At first, Shanti's father refused. "We entertained a fear in our minds that if Shanti were to go to Mathura, she would be unwilling to return to Delhi after seeing her husband and son. It would create a situation of extreme gravity. The sight of her extreme devotion to Pandit Kedarnath and the boy, and her intense desire to return with them to Mathura, had made a deep impression on our minds." However, the committee insisted. Eventually, on the 24th of November 1935, 12 days after meeting Chobi, Shanti, her parents and the entire inquiry set off by train on the 3-hour journey to Mathura. On the train, the committee noted that the girl said in colloquial Hindi, "It is 11 o'clock and the gates of the Dwarikadesh temple will be closed." She said the word pot for gate, which is used by the people of Mathura alone, according to the official report. Shortly before the train reached the station, A committee man told Shanti that Mathura was still a long way off. The girl said she could see from the roads and streets that the center of Mathura was very close. It had been announced in the press that Shanti was being taken back to Mathura, and at the station thousands of spectators gathered to see her. Overawed, the child sat on the lap of Mr. Deshbandhu, the Member of Parliament.